In what state is New Zealand's constitutional law and who is letting it down? Our current constitutional law isn't all in one place, and inconsistencies appear when different pieces of legislation bump against each other. Well, that's the view of Claire Charters, an associate professor at the University of Auckland Law School, who specialises in Indigenous people's rights. She's giving a public talk this week, arguing that tikanga Māori should be incorporated into our constitutional law. Kia ora, Claire.
Kia ora.
What's a constitution? Basic question first, but an important one.
Oh, there's lots of definitions of what a constitution is, but basically it's about the foundation, and in a liberal democracy, foundation of a state. And it's really about how power is shared and the kinds of institutions that form and exercise power in that state. But there are Indigenous ideas also of constitutions, so sort of liberal democracies don't have a monopoly on what is a state. So it's any, I guess, I would understand it as any way that power is shared and laws are made and people are regulated.
What is the current state of Aotearoa's constitutional law?
Well, I argue that our constitution is somewhat illegitimate because of its genesis. And we also have this other problem that there are poor protections of Māori rights in our state. So I would argue that our constitution needs reform.
When you question its genesis, what do you mean by that?
So I don't think that the legitimacy of the New Zealand state is secure. And that comes from arguments that we're, I guess, fairly familiar with these days, and that's around the Treaty of Waitangi and what that did. And certainly I don't think the Treaty of Waitangi, or at least the Māori text, transferred sovereignty from Māori to the British Crown. And without consent for the establishment of our state, it means that our state is somewhat precarious, certainly the legitimacy of it. And you might argue that developments since 1840 work some way to legitimise the state, but I'm not sure that's true. We still have a foundation and essentially brute force and exercise of brute force. And if you look at Māori, the situation of Māori today, so in terms of I guess criminal justice, in terms of poverty, in terms of education, health, and so on, I'm not sure that you can say that sort of benefits that have accrued over time function to legitimise the state. So I think we've still got this foundational problem. And we also have, I think, in the ways that our laws are made, these sort of systemic problems that mean that the laws discriminate against Māori, even and if it's not directly, even if it's not this, you know, you can't sit on a bus, that kind of thing. The system is so biased towards a colonial state system that it functions effectively to discriminate against Māori. So I think that's a problem.
We don't have a single document, neither does the UK, and of course we inherited and have modified the Westminster model. Do you believe that we should have one single constitutional document?
New Zealand and the UK are one of just only a few countries that don't have a single instrument, so I would start there. Do I think that we need a single instrument? I'm not sure about that, whether we do need a single instrument. I think it's something that we should absolutely consider. But I do think that we need to ensure that there are limitations on governmental power with respect to Māori. So what is really unique about New Zealand's constitution is that we can't challenge laws, and so we can't challenge legislation that is inconsistent with rights, and that's what makes New Zealand an anomaly. And you know, for a country that puts itself out there as a human rights abiding nation, and I would think in many respects that's true, but we should have stronger legal protections, I think, to ensure that legislation abides by human rights. So whether we need one instrument or not is, I'm not sure. I think it's one of the things to consider when we're thinking about the types of change. But I certainly think we need some limitations on power and some greater sharing of power, so we need to see greater pluralism.
And you see conflicting pieces of legislation at the moment impacting on very important issues like Māori sovereignty, and I think the Foreshore and Seabed Act is an example you give in this way.
Absolutely. So the Foreshore and Seabed Act, there were numerous problems with the Foreshore and Seabed Act, but one of them was that there was no point in Māori challenging that legislation because there was no power for the courts to overturn that power. And that's so different from all of the other states that we compare ourselves favourably to. I don't even think that would have been possible in Australia. And of course, if you can't challenge them, then there's nothing to constrain Parliament in passing discriminatory law. But as I say, I don't think that would have been possible in Australia and Canada and so on.
What would including, on a practical level, what would including tikanga Māori in a constitution achieve for Māori?
I should be clear about how I see tikanga being incorporated. I think that there should be greater opportunity for Māori to regulate themselves for forms of rangatiratanga, I guess, where tikanga is the law that is regulating Māori. I also think there's opportunity in places and spaces for tikanga Māori to regulate in New Zealand society as a whole. And we see that in numerous places already, although I don't think it's strong enough. So we see it in the Resource Management Act with references to kaitiakitanga, for example. But I think that there should be certainly far greater spaces for tikanga to regulate society as a whole, but also for Māori to have some authority over themselves using tikanga, if they so wish, as the legal system in place.
How have other countries tried to deal with this constitutional issue when it comes to Indigenous rights? I think Greenland has a potential model we could look to.
Greenland, amongst others. So Greenland is a colony of Denmark initially, and Greenland now basically has self or home rule, it's called in Greenland. It's regulate themselves, and Greenland is regulated by the Indigenous government. There's also examples in Canada, I think, is one where we often look to. And you increasingly see self-government agreements whereby Indigenous peoples regulate themselves according to with their own laws, and they share power with the state with respect to other issues. I think that's a space or place that might be inspiring to Aotearoa New Zealand. There's numerous examples around the world. In fact, New Zealand is the anomaly, is the odd one, in having such an understanding of power being so unitary. Certainly all the jurisdictions that we usually compare ourselves against are far more pluralist.
What would you say to critics, Claire, who would say this process would be discriminating against non-Māori?
Well, I would suggest that our current law is basically colonial law for all, or at least state law for all. So I'd say it's currently very discriminatory against Māori because the system that is regulating Aotearoa is not a Māori system. So I would start from that place and space. I'd also question, I guess, our understanding of democracy. New Zealand is, I guess, highly democratic in the sense that it is a democracy, but also that we don't have an understanding of democracy that includes rights. So in the US, for example, that also has a strong attachment to democracy and is very much a democratic system, you still see protections of rights for minorities. So democracy without protections of rights becomes something a bit like mob rule. And then when you have Māori rights rubbing up against interests of the rest of the population, so you see that, for example, in the foreshore and seabed, then it's very easy for the majority to just trample on those rights. And I don't think that's the way we see ourselves, but I think that's, in fact, how our legal system functions.
I know you've argued that the current system gives the government a great deal of power, but would more Indigenous autonomy have an immediate positive effect for our Māori communities, do you think?
I would hope so, and I see a lot of movement currently in the criminal justice space, and I think that because I think as a nation we're very aware that the system is broke, I think that Māori solutions to criminal justice problems show a great deal of certainly inspiration and potential to help address that situation in a way that we're not doing properly at the moment. Certainly there's evidence, for those listeners who might be interested, you might want to look up the Harvard Project, that there's evidence that when Indigenous peoples have greater autonomy and can regulate themselves, they do far better in sort of socioeconomic ways. And it's quite dramatic, the evidence. So that's drawn from examples of autonomy in the United States and Canada and Australia, and there's also some attention to Aotearoa New Zealand as well.
Associate Professor Claire Charters, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much. Claire's giving a free public talk this Thursday at the University of Auckland's Raising the Bar event on this issue, and there's a link to her talk on our webpage. If you want to join in the conversation on this, text 2101, texts cost 20 cents, or email 9 to noon at rnz.co.nz, where it's now 20 to 10.